talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey guys, before we get back to more of the Killer Bees, just want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, you know the holidays are going to get you worn out and run down. You're going to eat bad food. You're going to be low on energy. You think there's nothing you can do about it? That's not true. Go see the people at Apollo Men's Health. And for both men and women, they have ways to get more energy in your life on a daily basis and ways to help you with a variety of services that might be exactly what you need for what you're dealing with in your life on a daily basis. And by what I mean by that is if you're trying to start a New Year's resolution a little early and you want to start working out, but you don't know where to begin and how to go about it the right way, they can walk you through it. And you can start with a full body composition analysis where you can measure your body fat and you measure your muscle mass and measure all the current numbers and then check those numbers every couple of weeks to find out the progress you're making. If you need more energy on a daily basis, look, they've got you covered. You can start with something as simple as a B12 shot like I get every week. You can take it a step further and do hormone therapy, which they can do for both men and women in a variety of ways, including if you want to administer it yourself at home or if you want cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy where you only have to go in every 6 months, but you reap the benefits on a daily basis. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy is available as well. Check them out right now online at ApolloMH.com. If you see some services you think might be able to help you, set up an appointment. Talk to the people. See if they can help. You mention my name, Joel Blank, get a free B12 shot or a free body composition analysis on your first visit. But then go in there with an open mind, answer the questions, tell them what you're trying to do and where you're lacking. They'll put you on a program that works. They're going to get you results. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis. Go see the people at Apollo Men's Health.
All right, so the Astros, are they done? That is the question. Are the Astros done? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. What do you think? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. 6030 says, I thought Crane was going to go big after firing Click. Now I'm thinking he dipped his toes in the water and found out how expensive it was. Brantley is a Band-Aid to the offense, kind of upset we didn't truly solidify the outfield. I would respond to that by saying, who did you want? Who was the name that you wanted at the start of the offseason that was going to come in here and solidify the outfield? Because I really didn't see that guy. Like, unless you thought it was Brandon Nimmo, and Brandon Nimmo has some risk too. Like, sure. Look how many full seasons Brandon Nimmo has played. Look how many years Brandon Nimmo has been healthy. He makes George Springer look like the poster boy for health. Like, there's risk with all of these guys. So I don't understand who the name was that would have solidified this outfield.
No, you know what? You're right in saying what you did, because I look at it and go across the board and say, Benintendi just never seemed like the right pick. I think the White Sox way overpaid for too many years. I think that was a ridiculously risky deal.
To get Brantley. Like, he's Brantley at best.
Right, at best, right? And I think his best days are behind him now, but we'll wait and see. I think that you got a guy that fits in this clubhouse, which we know is important, that when he's healthy, and I understand that there's some risk involved there, but when he's healthy, is a 300 hitter that fits perfectly in this lineup, that does a lot of things that he's proven to be able to do over the course of his career in multiple stops and also as he in his entire time here with the Astros. And you don't have that long-term on-the-hook commitment that can handcuff you sometimes if you overpay or you get into a situation, which we've talked about in the past, where you panic a little bit and say, we didn't get another big name. We didn't get another impact-type player. Let's go spend and give 5 years and more money to someone that we think might fit. Because when you look at it, Conforto is the kind of guy coming off an injury that is doing the exact same deal. If you listen to Boris last week, Boris is just basically talking about, I want to prove it 1 year deal because I'm looking for a bigger deal for this kid when you realize he's healthy and he can play. Well, just insert a little older guy in Michael Brantley, but a guy that you already know the risk is less because you know what he can do in your lineup, in your park, as a part of your ball club, as opposed to bringing a guy in who have a different agenda, might get a little bit miffed when he's not playing consistently or gets days off and doesn't fit the same way.
When Crane started to, like, whenever he fired Click and, like, we heard that he wanted to spend money, things like that, if you would have said that the Astros sign Abreu and they sign Brantley to be your first baseman and then your left field DH, I would have taken that. I would have taken
you
that.
No addressing the catcher.
No, I've said from the beginning you don't need another catcher on this
team. And okay, I'm kind of going down our checklist. I'm fine with nothing in pitching.
No.
Utility, Yuli or not, you've got utility covered.
See, that's where, like, whenever we ask the question of, like, okay, are they done? Are the Astros done? Do you think that they are?
I think they're going to make a push at Yuli. If it's not Yuli, I think they might get a backup infielder type position player that could play middle infield and give you some stability there. I don't think that they're going to do anything big and splashy. They might look at a left-handed reliever now because they do have, they still have a lot of money left, and they could actually, if it's possible, improve the best bullpen in baseball and give Dusty more options. I think that's the only thing. I don't think you're, if you're looking for something splashy to say they're not done, I don't think it's happening.
I don't think they're going to sign anything of significance the rest of the offseason. I think for the most part they are done. They could sign a lefty reliever. They could sign. They need to sign another utility infielder. So I think that whatever the Astros do the rest of the way will be small. But whenever you like also look at it from a money perspective, the Astros still have about $20 million under the competitive balance tax. Let me sell you on a couple of ideas that I'm wondering if you're if you'd be interested in. And we'll ask the Hive too, 713-780-ESPN. But first, I need to tell D. Green on Twitter to delete his account. He said that Judge could have solidified the outfield.
Stop it.
You tried to sell us on Judge now.
At $40 million a year. You want to talk about handcuff
paralyzing. You said you want a Judge. You said that Aaron Judge to Houston would be fine. Spend the Verlander money on Judge.
You could.
Now, you drew the line at like 5 years, and I laughed and said it's not going to be 5 years.
I'm saying at the contract he signed with the Yankees, if you wanted to go 10 or 11 years and give him 40 a year and know how old he was going to be at the end of that deal, and basically like we said, what was the cut line?
Yeah.
Midway point.
I'd
give him 5 years.
I gave you the realistic of like what it would take for Judge, and you scoffed at that, to be fair. But here are a couple of ideas that I have with the remaining $20 million that the Astros have under the competitive balance tax. I don't hate the idea if they want to still operate like $10, $15 million under it, maybe $10 million under it. That way, if they need to add somebody at the deadline, they can add somebody at the deadline. A lot of people scoff at the idea of why are they acting under the competitive balance tax? Just go over it. I don't think that Jim Crane really wants to do that. I think he kind of looks at that as a luxury tax. A couple of ideas I have. I'll start with one. Sign one really good utility player that can play, that can be your super utility guy. He can play literally anywhere that you want, and he's going to start 110 games. It's like the Marwin Gonzalez back in the day when he wasn't one of your nine starters, but he played almost every single day. A lot of people don't like this idea because if you're signing this one utility guy, it probably means the end of Yuli Gurriel. Mm-hmm. And there's only really a couple of guys out there that could potentially do this. There's really not many. The only one that could potentially do this, and I don't think he'd be interested in this job, to be quite honest with you, I think he wants to be an everyday starter, is Jurickson Profar.
I was just going to say, I knew that's where you were going.
And Jurickson Profar probably doesn't hit as much as you would like. He's much more of a really good defensive left fielder. He's not a great hitter, but he's a switch hitter. He can be a super utility. He can play a little bit all over. I'm not really even sold on the Profar idea. But you could go, I also think that you could use a righty here. Because like if you look at left field DH, you got Brantley and Yordan. Brantley didn't hit lefties all that well last 2 years. So I think you could use an extra righty bat, especially if you don't believe in Jake Myers. Will Myers, who came over from, who was a free agent, played at San Diego, originally at Tampa, can play a little bit of outfield. He's even dabbled in center field, but he can play left and right. I don't really trust him in center, but he can play there in case of emergency, and he can also play the corner infield positions. Give him a big one-year deal with a most of this $20 million. All of these guys, by the way, I'm not signing for more than 1 year. I don't want long-term commitment with these guys, just 1 year.
Well, with the market drying up, you got a chance for that.
1 year deal?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm not signing any of these guys for more than 1 year. But a Will Myers, who's going to be off the bench, can play backup first, backup third, backup corner outfield. He can start a few games against the lefties at left field DH, and he can play a little center, an emergency center fielder. The infielders that come to mind, and again, none of these are sexy, Gene Segura, Brandon Drury, Elvis Andrews.
I like Gene Segura from the simple standpoint. You're talking about like a Michael Brantley type infielder in terms of his bat. I think he can hit 300. I think that he's been a reliable bat over the course of his career. He's been an underrated bat. We saw him in the World Series struggle, and I think that's the lasting memory that people have of him. But I saw him play in Milwaukee and Arizona and a lot of places where he kind of went under the radar. But what he consistently does is hit 300, and we talked about it at the start of the World Series. He's a good contact hitter. He puts the bat on the baseball. I don't mind that. If that's your backup solution to Yuli, where he can play the infield and he can be that Marwin Gonzalez type player, I would like him better than the other names that you mentioned.
I think there's a huge luxury for a super utility guy that can play, start 100 games. Now, Segura's not going to play outfield, but he can start at second. He's not a great shortstop, but he's like a Ledesma Diaz.
You don't need him to do it like 6 days in a row.
20
just
starts
here and there, right?
Yeah, 20 starts on the season, best case scenario. He's going to give you defensively at shortstop what a Ledesma Diaz gave you defensively at shortstop, but he can also play third base. This is if you're not going the Yuli Gurriel route as your backup infielder, which like, might not be a bad idea, because right now your backup shortstop is probably Mauricio Dubon. Like, Mauricio Dubon, maybe David Hensley. Like, that's the competition right there. So I would like an upgrade at the middle infield.
Let's also be realistic. The smartest move you could make would be to upgrade with a Gene Segura type.
Yep.
But
I
the
think
most
so.
Loyal move you can make that fans are really leaning on you to make is to bring Yuli back because of the emotions that are involved in this. If you just make a straight business decision, it's another guy that is younger, more versatile, and capable to play those middle infield positions that you really, really are going to need during the course of the season. But if you start tugging at your own heartstrings because you know your fans are clamoring for that, then Yuli's your guy.
Yeah, and Yuli's not going to play maybe a little bit of second base. I doubt it, but definitely
that's
like
as far
shortstop.
As it goes. He's not playing shortstop.
Like, I think this team would be better off with a really good utility infielder that can also play some outfield. Here's another option for a right-hand bat. Now, he's older. A.J. Pollock, who I think can hit, if you look at his numbers, he hits lefties really well. He's a backup outfielder that only starts against lefties. I don't care about his age.
He started falling off a cliff, though.
Even though he fell off a cliff last year, look at his left-handed numbers. His OPS is like over 850 against lefties. I'm not starting him against righties. I'm starting him only against lefties because this is a very left-handed hitting outfield, and he's not playing very much. Or you have $20 million. You got $20 million here, right? I'm not signing any of these guys for more than 1 year. What if you go like Nathan Eovaldi?
The pitcher.
Somebody who
doesn't.
Now, he's also said some bad things about the Astros, so I don't think people love this, but he's probably the best arm still in the market. He can be a starter, but we've also seen him out of the bullpen for Alex Cora and the Red Sox whenever they had the deep playoff run. Nathan Eovaldi, $20 million. Now, he's not a starter. You're probably making him a reliever. And maybe not even 20, maybe like 10, 15. But a couple another relieving arms that I like, Craig Kimbrell, Adam Onavito. And if you want to go the lefties route, Andrew Chafin's out there.
I was just going to ask if Chafin had signed yet, because
he's not.
Ottavino and Chafin would be guys that I would really consider. I think Kimbrell still thinks he's
think
better
you
than
only
he is.
Need, probably, that's fair. And you probably only need one of these guys.
Yeah, but I think those two guys, in terms of playoff experience, and Ottavino's been with the Mets, he's been with the Yankees, he was really good for the Yankees. I think that he could be a guy that could fit seamlessly into that bullpen and kind of eat up some innings and be a guy that he doesn't have to be in the high leverage situations, but he can do a lot of good for you in the bullpen. I'd be interested in what the price tag would be, because I don't think you'd have to overpay that much for one of those two guys.
Let me sell you on Chafin. Give me Chafin and you can pick the backup infielder for the Astros.
See, because I mean, the thing that's interesting to me is what price is Segura going to
I don't think that much. I think $8 million a year, probably.
Because if it's in that $7 or $8 million a year range, I think you can get him, you can get a pitcher, and you can still have money in your slush fund for when you need, if you need it when the season starts.
So give me Chafin, you take Segura.
Yeah.
The two moves the Astros should make the rest of the way, according to the Killer Bee.
Well, and
sign
then we
the
take
left
the heat
Chafin
of not bringing Yuli back.
And sign,
okay.
That's all right. We've been taking heat for hating on Yuli all year. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. World Cup final was outstanding. What are the greatest games you've ever watched? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, I've been telling you about them for years, and I do it because I believe in them, because I believe that my friend Corey, who owns the company, believes in taking care of Houstonians, and he is the man at the top. So that's why I believe in them, and they've also done great work for me, and so I can speak for them because I have had experience with them. Fitz Roofing does it the best. Best warranties in the business, best ratings in the business. They use the best products in the business, like CertainTeed shingles. We got rain today. We're going to have cold after that. Is your roof going to be able to withstand it? Because the last time that you need to figure it out is after it's too late and it starts getting to your drywall and ruining your belongings and gets into your house. Make sure you don't have a leaky roof. Make sure your roof is ready for whatever weather comes your way, whether it be rain and damp moisture or whether it be cold. If you need a new roof or you need to fix a leaky roof, the time is now to get it taken care of before it's too late. And you know what? The time is now, because it's always right with Fitz. They'll come to you and tell you what they can do, and it won't cost you a thing. They will come and do a free, no-obligation inspection. All you got to do is pick up the phone. All you do is call them. It's 832-521-3001. They come to you. They tell you exactly what they would do. They go on with the rest of their day. You want them to come back, you book the appointment, and you realize before, during, and after the sale, they are going to be there with you every step of the way, taking care of it like they said they were going to do. Check out all the services they offer, because they also do home repairs, fences in the yard, and a lot of other things. By just going to their website at fitzroofing.com. But believe me when I tell you, Fitz Roofing is taking care of you one home at a time.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
World Cup final on Sunday. Outstanding. Did you watch the third place game? The World Cup? Should they not have a third place game?
Are you kidding me?
In the World Cup final?
No, the answer is no. Sorry, Glenn Davis. No. Sorry, not sorry. Hold on. I had buddies
who were watching it, and I was like, you guys are watching the bronze medal game?
I might have an insane side of things here. I watched the entire bronze medal game, and I only watched bits and pieces of the final.
You're a backwards human
being. That's weird.
It's Brendan, though. It was really, like, it's par for the course.
It was really all.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you. I was going to say, well, if you watch both, I realize that at home, you're very much a homebody, like on steroids. So I get that you would enjoy watching both games. But if you watch the bronze medal game more than the gold medal game, that's absolutely ridiculous.
I had plans Sunday morning, so I was kind of moving around Sunday morning, didn't have the same time. Whereas Saturday morning, I woke up at a friend's house because he picked me up from the airport. He turned the game on in the morning, and we watched the game.
Okay. Yeah. Third place games are weird. It's kind of silly. Yeah. But anyways, the final was outstanding. You had Messi, his final international cap, trying to win his first ever World Cup. You had Mbappe on the other side. They went toe-to-toe. They scooped 2-2 after the end of regulation. They both score extra time goals, and then Argentina wins it on PKs. This was a pretty cool moment. The Argentina announcer when Argentina won the World Cup.
Ma Montiel! Montiel! Ah!
Argentina, campeón del mundo. He said they're the champ of the world. He was crying. He got emotional. He was in tears.
He's Argentinian.
After, yes, thank you.
Well, I'm saying, I mean, that's if your team wins the World Cup and, you know, in that fashion, I can understand your emotions getting the best of you.
If U of H won a national championship, I would have that same call. I would cry on the air. I'd be emotional. I would come to tears.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I would come to tears.
When the Rockets won it, I think there was a tear in my eye. I mean, I think when the Packers won the Super Bowl, I know there was a tear in my eye. And I think that that's the love and the passion that you have for sports and teams. And it shows that you are truly that kind of a fan when your team reaches the pinnacle and you've gone through the trials and tribulations and you get to enjoy it.
Yeah, so the question we have now, after watching what was one of the greatest World Cup finals of all time, what are the greatest games that you've watched? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What are the greatest games that come to your mind when you think of this
question?
Your
Honor, can I ask a question? Would it be in person?
I prefer mayor.
Or just, oh, that's right.
It could be either.
J-Bone? Can I ask you, does it mean you were there in person or you just watched them on TV?
Either one counts here because I wasn't at the World Cup final, and that's what
I've watched just about every great moment on TV. I mean, I've watched Tiger Woods win the Masters and that putt that hung on the lip of the cup. I lived.
See, if I'm going Tiger, though, I go U.S. Open over the Masters. The one where he knocked in that, you know, 10-foot birdie putt to force the 18-hole next round. The next day against Rocco Mediate.
I'm going over Masters. With the bad wheel.
Yeah, it's like he needed surgery.
Again, I watched that, too.
Yeah.
But I think the ones that always stick out to me are the ones that I can say, man, I was here for that. And obviously, a lot of them are centered around the Rockets. But Mario's kiss of death sitting right behind Rudy, right in that corner, right on that sideline to see it from the corner. When everyone on the bench was no, 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 yes, when it went in, and then to see it culminate in winning the championship, or to like see Dream do that to David Robinson with the Dream Shake in person, brought chills to you. Those are the
Robinson one didn't have the stakes though, right?
Like no, the kiss of death and winning the finals.
Like they got there, but they didn't win the championship with that.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, I don't know. Like locally, I think you can put both of those on there, right?
Right.
Like I mean, you can go back to the Astros as well and talk about like greatest games ever. You can look at the ride to 17, whether it was like Game 7 of the ALCS against the Yankees, a walk off from Altuve, walk offs from Correa, because it's kind of the ride of getting to a championship. So I think would be on that same conversation. The Elijah one moment over Robinson, like obviously they got to the championship there and won it there as well.
Mm-hmm.
That one to me was not necessarily like greatest games ever. It's like more like greatest Elijah one moments ever.
I was covering the finals for the NBA and was in the building when Ray Allen did the miraculous step back three off the Bosch rebound that basically changed the complexion of the finals. But I'm trying to think of like the biggest, most amazing sports memories of our lifetime.
I have a game that I remember when it ended having the thought that's the best football game I've ever watched. And I don't know if it's one that people necessarily go to right away, but Kansas City, New England, 2019 AFC Championship game. Finished in the mid to high 30s, went to overtime. It was kind of the up-and-coming Chiefs still.
Like, yeah.
I think that might have been Patrick Mahomes' first year versus, like, you know, the final years of the
Brady
dominance. I remember that game ended, and I thought that is the best.
I think if we just classify, though, the greatest NFL football game we've ever watched, we might have seen it last year in the playoffs with the back and forth between the Bills and the Chiefs.
And that's why I said I don't think people think of mine, because they think of that one more recently.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think everybody's just a little bit different, right? Like, everybody has a different view of the greatest game that they've ever seen. 713-780-ESPN. What's the greatest game you've ever seen? 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, get JC in here. JC, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, JC?
Hey, guys, I want to say great show. Love the topic and greatest game I've ever seen. Texas versus USC in the Rose Bowl. Vince Young bringing home the title.
Yeah, that's a really good one,
that's
JC, especially if you're a Texas fan.
Sure.
Now, I've never been confused with somebody who's a Texas fan, but a huge Vince Young fan. I loved Vince Young. I loved Vince Young. Watched him at Madison, followed his career. Texas always rooted for Vince Young. So watching that game, it's definitely on that list of greatest games ever, because you had VY going up against what many people considered the greatest college football team ever assembled with Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush. You had Lindell White, who got the carry on fourth and one over Reggie Bush. A lot of people looked at that team as the greatest college team ever. And for Vince Young, who many people thought was like a one-man team, beating USC, that was one of the greatest college football games of all time. I would agree with that.
No doubt, because I'm going sport by sport trying to pick out the greatest game.
A lot of people are saying game five of the World Series with the Astros and Dodgers.
I watched all of that. Yeah, I mean, I saw that. And I mean, again, it's the local impact for us versus the national impact for everyone. Like, I was there in person in the finals for the Michael Jordan shrug your shoulders game. I was an intern with the Blazers and traveled. And to see him do that in person in Chicago Stadium with the way the entire building went just completely ballistic. Mm-hmm. And you understand why. That was something. But then when I think about it and say, well, what were the greatest finals games or the greatest NBA games of all time? I think I've seen them. I think it's even more impactful when you've been there to kind of, both good and bad. I was there for Damon Lillard's shot that beat the Rockets and ripped our hearts out. I was there for the illegal screen of Karl Malone that set Stockton free in the summit to eliminate the Rockets in a year I thought they could win it all. So it's the local versus the national perspective too. But like to have watched on TV the Jordan flu game or the Jordan, whether he pushed off or not, the game winner to maybe culminate his career. I mean, those were big, too.
713-780-ESP. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Ron, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Greatest game ever.
Hi. The body bag game, Monday Night Madness, Eagles versus Washington Redskins.
Okay.
In November 1990.
Wow. That's going way back. Appreciate the call, Ron. 713-780-ESP. I don't recall it either. I was going to put it into Google real quick.
Yeah, I was like, the body bag game. I don't recall if that was...
It's a thing. It's on Wikipedia. It's called the body bag
game. Is that right?
Yeah. November 12th, 1990, the Eagles and the Washington football team.
Now.
Buddy Ryan versus Joe Gibbs. Mm. The Eagles defeated the Washington football team 28-14. Buddy Ryan told reporters his team would inflict a beating on Washington so bad they'd have to be carted off in body bags.
Hmm.
There was 9 Washington football team members left with injuries, and an Eagles player reacted to one of those injured football team players by yelling, "Do you guys need any more body bags?"
Hmm.
Eagles won that game 28-14.
Okay.
There you go. Called by
Al Michaels. I wasn't aware.
I wasn't either. Now you know. 713-780-ESPN. Greatest games ever played. 713-780-3776. In honor of Argentina winning the World Cup against France.
Somewhere Manu Ginobili is smiling and calling or texting Tony Parker.
And Luis Scola. 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5. ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Greatest games ever played in honor of this Argentina-France final. That was fantastic. Messi in his final international cap, riding off into the Argentinian sunset as a World Cup champion. Mbappe.
Wait, time out. You're a soccer guy more than me.
Okay.
The argument was going in that he needed this to solidify being the greatest of all time, the GOAT of soccer. Did he do that?
See, it's hard for me because to go back and like look against like Pelé and all like the old school. Like I'm really not a historian of soccer as I am of other sports. Really, it's just my lifetime. In our generation, though, I don't think there's any doubt that it's Messi. Now, Mbappe's pretty darn good, even though some other people might not think
so. He's only 23.
He's very, very young. And he's already got a World Cup championship. Like, he won the last World Cup. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Greatest games ever. Let's start off with Steve. Steve, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, man. It was 2017 Game 5. In the stadium, the whole stadium got quiet and then sang the national anthem, and it was a show from then on. Greatest thing I've ever been to in my life.
You know, it's appreciate the call,
that's
Steve.
That's the Bregman hit that scored Fisher?
Yeah, Derek Fisher was not the basketball player.
No.
The guy that got traded to the Blue Jays. That's the one where they were trailing a lot. Clayton Kershaw was on the mound. Home run. Springer made a gaffe, then leads off the next inning with a home run. Lasted like 4.5 hours. Sean Bajani and I were on the highway to hell doing like this Astros. Like,
my boy Sean. Great.
It was like the, yeah, there we go. It was like the Bajani Branham cast. Like, we were doing radio during the game. Probably wasn't legal. But we were doing...
I was going to say, do we have the statute of limitations? We're out of the window?
I hope so. I was just doing what I was told, being a good soldier. But anyways, we were doing it during that game. So it was, like, pretty cool to be doing it during that game. And, like, we had a get-out time of, like, midnight or something like that. And the game was still going on, and it was, like, 12:45 in the morning. I'm probably off with the details, but you get my point.
Did you stay on the air?
Yeah, we stayed on the air. And then Shane Lechler called into the post-game show.
The punter.
The punter. The greatest punter of all time.
Nice. Ray Guy would like a moment if he could. But,
yeah. But it was kind of funny. So Game 5, I think, is at least from like an Astros perspective, the game that sticks out. But there's so many great Astros finishes. Like, you had the World Series. Like, they won the World Series. You have the Yordan moment this year. You have a no-hitter this year in a World Series, which has only been done twice in Major League Baseball history. First time
since
Don Larson. You
got an 18-inning playoff game. You've got the Yordan bomb. I know that it just feels like we're missing monumental games.
I don't want to go too deep down this rabbit hole, but it's a genuine question. When you say the Yordan moment from this year, which one are you even referring to?
Which one do you think?
Probably the World Series.
It's not a probably.
It's
hold on. I mean, I get that that's the World Series, but a walk-off, I think, adds value, too.
Well, I think when it happened, too, because that could have changed the complexion of the entire series, because everybody had their dobber
down. And they were down that whole game.
That's what I'm saying.
No way home run stacks up to Yordan's home run in Game 6.
I'm just saying from the complexion of everybody's dobber was down thinking, oh, my God, they might be crapping the bed here.
You're selling it, and you're selling it well, but ain't no way. It's more important than Yordan's home run in Game 6 of the World Series.
I'm not really talking about more important. I'm talking about the better game. When you're talking about, because that's the discussion, I didn't know which one you meant when you were talking about better game, because that game, they trailed the whole way.
The stakes of the game matter as well.
Absolutely.
So ALDS Game 1 versus Game 6 of the World Series, where if you win that game, you have a parade and you hang a banner, that was the better game, in my opinion.
Oh, I can give you another one. Again, it's got local ties, but it's also one like that. Was the Kenny Smith 3 Elijah-Juan Tippen game in Orlando
after
in Game 1?
Because
exactly. Because that finals could have gone differently if that doesn't happen.
I remember where I was watching that game. My mom let me stay up past my bedtime.
I was in the second row. I mean, the first row of the upper deck with our Spanish announcers, watching that shot right in line with Kenny's 3.
I was in the second deck of my bunk bed.
There you go.
Begging my mother to let me stay up to watch Game 1 of the NBA Finals and see Nick the Brick do his thing. 713-780-ESPN. Greatest sports games ever. 713-780-3776. Back to the HRMP listener line. Big C, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's yours, man?
Hey, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
What's up, C?
Great games is things like y'all were just saying. You remember where you were when you were watching them and what you were doing. Mm-hmm. For me, it was in 2018. I went home to New Orleans to visit family Thanksgiving weekend. Number 22, Texas A&M versus LSU. The 7 overtime thriller.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the one that would never end.
You couldn't pull yourself away from the TV. And they didn't pull it out. LSU wound up losing. But to go back and drive back to Houston and to stop at Bucky's on the way in on I-10 and seeing all the LSU fans coming back. They were disappointed, but it was one of the greatest games to talk about and see in my lifetime.
That one's interesting.
Appreciate the call, Clarence.
Clarence might be the only person that would put that game as the greatest game
of his
lifetime.
It's not a magnitude game, right?
Yeah, that, you know, it's like I think one team was ranked, like he mentioned. But what's interesting about that game is that game changed rules. The college football overtime rules had to be changed because of LSU, Texas A&M. So while that game might not have had the stakes, it definitely was monumental.
Yeah, because I'm trying to think of, like, in sports, it's like, you know, those games where you just have a feeling like, no matter what the situation is, it's nothing's insurmountable, right? Like, it seems like if one team got four runs in the top of the ninth inning, the other team was going to find a way. And you've seen games go that way where you just can't get guys out. You know that you're never out of the game. And I think a lot of the Astros-Dodgers games in that series had that feeling of, oh, my God, it's crazy, the comebacks. It's crazy the way the teams were staying in it. But that's why I feel like we're just missing some games somewhere along the line.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
It's not the number one game, but it came to mind when Clarence brought up Texas A&M. How about the Johnny Manziel Texas A&M Alabama?
Maybe upset? Bama.
Yeah.
A lot of Aggies would say that.
That's a game that I remember where I was when he started talking about A&M and remembering where you were. That's what came to my mind.
Jumped on the scene, won the Heisman, you know, what was the cash sign that he was doing? Yeah. Cash money. 713-780-ESPN. Let's head out to the HRMP listener line. Pena, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Your favorite game ever, Texans? Best game ever, a Texans game?
How is that possible?
Hey, what's going on, guys? So I've got two that I've personally been to, both Texans. Is a 4 years in with Deshaun and threw it to Hopkins, and he did the spin Rooney's.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then, Andre Johnson's walk-off. Thank y'all. Have a great day.
The Andre Johnson. I'm struggling with the Andre Johnson walk-off. I don't remember the Andre Johnson walk-off. I remember the
Spinner Rooney. I remember the Vince Young walk-off in NRG, which was
ran right up the tunnel.
And the people went freaking nuts here for the opposing team.
See, I think a lot of people, if you were forced to name a Texans moment, I think a lot would have had the J.J. Watt pick six against the Bengals. Mm-hmm. I think it was his rookie year. I think a lot of people picked that for the Texans. The Andre, I'm struggling remembering that one. 713-780-ESPN, greatest games ever. 713-780-3776. Dan, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's yours?
Yes, fellas, I'm a New York Giants fan from the Northeast, and it has to be when the Giants crushed the Patriots to ruin their perfect season. And the second one was many years before that when Norwood shanked it in the Super Bowl to lose it for the Buffalo Bills.
Was that the famous wide right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the Norwood game. I think that was the Whitney Houston anthem game too.
Was it?
I think so.
Because the movie's coming out, and was it in Miami?
I don't remember where it was.
Because I know that they show the aerials for the movie preview, and I was like, "What Super Bowl was that?" And I couldn't quite place it. I don't know that the Giants won the game, but wasn't that the helmet catch?
David Tyree
helmet catch was the one that allowed them to beat the Patriots and break up the undefeated season.
They beat them twice. But the David Tyree catch was the one where they broke up the undefeated season. Plaxico Burress was their star receiver.
I don't think that he made it sound like, you know, they waxed him. I don't think that's the case.
You know what people don't remember about that game when they talk about the David Tyree helmet catch?
The sideline play?
That Eli Manning had two different defenders holding on to him
before
that throw.
Yeah.
He was literally like wrapped up and he got away, and then they got the helmet catch. That play is probably the craziest play we've ever seen.
He went Steve McNair. Remember, Steve McNair had some plays like that in the Super Bowl, too, when they played the Rams, where he was, like, breaking these insane tackles. But you wouldn't expect that from Eli Manning. You expect it from Steve McNair.
Right,
713-780-ESPN. What is the greatest game ever in honor of this France-Argentina World Cup final on Sunday? Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. Alex, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Alex?
Hey, guys. Love the show. Just want to let y'all know that Game 6 this year, we won the World Series, the Yordan home run. Luckily, my wife is awesome, and we won that game on my wedding night.
Oh, wow.
So how did you watch that game?
Do what?
Dead, I guess. Alex, how did you watch that game? Like, you got married that night. The Astros won the World Series. How did you follow along with that game?
So we got married earlier that evening. We did a small thing, only about 40 people at my house. We had a two-shot patio, and we got married about 4:30 that afternoon. We ate, we danced, we did everything, and then everybody settled in to watch the game because they knew the stakes.
That's so smart. Alex, you're a smart man. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees.
And then he had his own walk-off. I mean, it's perfect. I was just going to ask him if the child is due fairly soon here.
Never put yourself in somebody else's bedroom.
Oh, my God.
Never do that.
He had his own walk-off. He got married.
I understood what you meant. 713-780-ESPN. What are the greatest games ever played? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, again, look, I'm trying to do a public service announcement for you guys. I know you're not watching the calendar like you should. I know you're forgetting about the fact that you still got shopping to do and you need to get gifts. I'm telling you right now, pajamagram.com is the place to go to take care of her, also take care of you, get a gift that keeps on giving, and make sure you don't have to go to the mall and fight for parking and stand in lines and do all the things you dread doing when doing any kind of holiday shopping. It is perfect. They have naturally nude pajamas. They are available exclusively at Pajamagram. They are going to be unbelievably good for you because she's going to look great in them. She's going to love them too, though, because they're soft, just like her skin. It's going to be more alluring than lingerie. The texture and the touch of these pajamas is very, very seductive. You guys are both going to love them, but it leaves nothing to the imagination, which is perfect for you too. You don't need mistletoe. You just get these naturally nude pajamas, and you guys are set for the holiday season. She's going to love the feeling of wearing them. You're going to love the way she looks. And by the way, as an extra added bonus, they're going to throw in a naturally nude nightgown as well. So you get two gifts for the price of one. She wears them both for you, and you guys both feel like you've won. And it's absolutely fantastic. It's a $75 savings on that best-selling holiday gift of the nightgown, but you're also going to get the pajamas, which you order first. All you've got to do, and I'm telling you right now, because I'm also going to tell you they're going to take care of the gift wrapping, and they're going to get it there on time for the holidays. So they're going to take care of all the details that you might have let slip through the cracks, if you know what I mean. Now this is one that you're going to take care of from the word go. Just go to pajamagram.com. That's right, pajamagram.com. Get those naturally nude pajamas. Everything else is going to fall in line with everything that I've talked about, and you are going to be a hero in your household. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by pajamagram.com.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Greatest games ever in honor of Argentina-France on Sunday. 713-780-ESPN. Payne just sent us an update about the game. He was talking about the Andre Johnson one. I remember it now that he gave me a hint. Okay. It was when they beat the Jags in 2012. They beat them in overtime 43-37, and Andre had like over 200 yards catching that game. He had 14 catches, 273 yards, and he scored the game-winning touchdown in overtime.
Wow.
Now, the Jags were terrible, and the Texans improved to 9-1. So it's like, probably should have never been in that situation, but really great moment is Andre Johnson, the walk-off. What are the greatest games ever? 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Will, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Will?
I think that the 05 national championship game between Texas and USC was the best game that I ever remember watching.
Appreciate it, Will. Yeah, that one's been one that we had many people have texted about that. People have called about that as well. I would have a tough time thinking of another national perspective greatest college football game of all time. Somebody said the Ohio State-Miami game that went to overtime, the BCS national championship. Yep. Now, sometimes you get your personal biases of like why you would rank games ahead of it. Like I love the Peach Bowl when Houston beat Florida State and they had Dalvin Cook tapping out of the game because he didn't want none of that third ward Cougar defense. Or when they beat Oklahoma the very next year with Baker Mayfield on that team, Samaje Perine on that team, and the Cougars went to NRG and just blasted Oklahoma. So like for me, from a football perspective, mm-hmm. I look at those. College basketball perspective for me, I look at the year that, you know, Houston went to the Final Four, beating Arizona last year in the Sweet 16 in front of, you know, a ton of Cougar fans Michigan. In San Antonio was unbelievable. I don't like remembering the Michigan game when Jordan Poole hit that shot, and I hate remembering the Tyler Hero game in the Sweet 16 where he hit that transition three.
I don't remember that one.
I mean, it wasn't a buzzer beater. But it was Sweet 16, under a minute to play. I think we were up with under a minute to play. And Tyler Hero hits this contested transition three that pretty much gave them the win. It was heartbreaking. Back-to-back years.
Yeah, just for some reason, I didn't remember that. But I think, you know, like, I think about whether you've been there or not. Some of, like, I feel like we're missing big games, whether it be locally or nationally. And I think about, like, everybody talks about watching U of H go down in the Final Four to Jimmy Valvano's Wolfpack. And I remember not, I haven't been to Houston yet. I didn't become a true Houstonian. And I remember feeling the heartbreak for U of H because I was just a big fan of the Phi Slam Majama and from afar.
Yeah.
And I remember how heartbreaking and crushing that was. So there's some heartbreak in there too, but it's just the game itself. If there's one of those back to back, if there's time left on the clock, you know, the other team's got a shot type moments, I feel like there's more out there.
What is Wisconsin's biggest heartbreaker? Because that's my favorite game.
I'm sure it is.
I wasn't alive for the Houston NC State. Obviously, I know a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like for me to be greatest game ever, I wanted it to have been around to see it. And I would have, one, probably needed to see it. Somebody texted in about the game of the century at the Astrodome. Number one, UCLA. Number two, Houston. Elvin Hayes.
I wasn't around for that one. Lou Alcindor. Sure that would have been awesome.
John Wooden, Dick Enberg calling it. But, you know, I believe that it's the greatest game ever, but it's hard for me to say it's my greatest game ever because I wasn't around for it. 713-780-ESPN.
Like the massive upset of like watching Villanova upset heavily favored Georgetown.
Yeah.
And Raleigh Massimino just coaching up a storm to slow it down. And basically, it wasn't fun to watch, but it was one of the biggest upsets in college basketball history.
Yeah. 9656 says the Villanova National Championship when they beat North Carolina, which was at NRG Stadium. I was at that game. That was a great finish. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line and get Mark in here. Mark, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Going back to Cougar basketball before you were born, the semifinal game against Louisville.
Yep. The Doctors of Dunk.
Dr. Dunkerson.
On and on and on. That game was just unbelievable.
Appreciate the call,
Louisville
Mark.
had Daryl Griffith, Dr. Dunkenstein.
Yep.
But they had, was that Roddy McRae?
Yeah, he was on that team.
Yeah.
I went, so during COVID, because I was out of work and had nothing to do, I went back and because I was sad that COVID eliminated the NCAA tournament that year, I went back and watched every Houston Cougar NCAA tournament game that I could find in the history of the program. So the Houston Louisville game is on YouTube, and I went back and watched that. Unbelievable.
Is that Derek Smith on that team?
I can't remember. But it was Phi Slam Majama against the Doctors of Dunk, and they played this all-out, like, up-and-down-the-floor two-point game that was, like, 91-89 that was just, like, as entertaining can be.
Yeah, and I remember the Ewing-Olajuwon matchup, but there were so many games that you think about, you know, at the time and go, well, those were some good players. No, those were some good teams. Those were team games. That's what makes that so much fun. That's why the NCAA tournament's so great, because you remember the Bryce Drew three. You don't want to remember that the Rockets used that game to draft him in the first round and he flopped mightily. But that Bryce Drew buzzer beating win for Valpo was massive.
713-780-ESPN. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Jeremy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Jeremy.
Thanks. Will got me with Texas UC. USC, but I'm going to go way back. I'm going to go 1994, Game 6, Rockets, Knicks, when Olajuwon blocked Stark three to end the game.
And forced Game 7. Good call there. Yeah, the 94 final run where you had all the big shots. You had Cassell, you had Vernon Maxwell, but yeah, that Olajuwon block of that Starks three that would have ended it. Forced Game 7, and then they inevitably got the win in Game 7.
And good for the News not interrupting that game with O.J. Simpson's
White Bronco
stuff, which that was the Game 5 that O.J. Simpson interrupted. The moment that I always remember of that Game 6 was the Olajuwon block on Starks.
Mm-hmm.
Starks had the look from the corner. Olajuwon got a hand on it.
That's what I'm saying. There's no Game 7. There's no Rockets championship if that goes down. And we don't know if you'd have made it or not, but the fact that you didn't have to worry about it when watching it going through the air, because Olajuwon made another one of those miraculous recovery plays. Because I think about, he did it to Strickland in the playoffs against the Blazers. He did it to Kevin Johnson where he caught him from like a half a court away. But the fact that it might have been more impressive to do what he did and catch Starks in the middle of a jump shot. And that altered everything in the history of the Rockets.
A lot of people were saying Boise State against Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl.
That was a good one.
I knew the punter. The punter was somebody I went to high school with, Kyle Stringer.
That was the Statue of Liberty play?
Yeah.
And then the marriage proposal in the end zone?
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Ryan, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. Go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, man, you just stole my thunder. I was going to say Boise State, Oklahoma, but I'll give you this. My dad was lucky enough to go to things you've already mentioned, USC, Texas, Game 5 of Astros, Dodgers, Game 6 of this last series, but also the 1980 Lake Placid hockey game.
Okay. See, that's the one that Blankers mentioned during the break.
I was a wee lad, but I know that I was alive for it and watched it, and I remember my entire household staying up and watching all of it, and I don't know if it was on tape delay or not. And that wasn't even to win the gold.
I'm pretty sure it was on
tape delay. Yeah, that wasn't even to win the gold. That was just to get there.
That was pretty semifinal.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. Dre mentioned this before, but this is one that I remember because I think I remember more so for the people that left early, but then wanted to say that they were there, was the T-Mac, 11 points, 33 seconds, something like that. Yeah, but whatever it was, that against the Spurs, again, an in-state rival at the time when they were really, really good, that was massive, that victory right there.
I remember
there.
Watching that from my recliner. It was Kevin Harlan on the call. Kevin Harlan
called
that game.
Was it a TNT game?
Yep, it's a TNT game. I remember watching. It was on my recliner back in Atascocita.
It was Gene and Jim, baby.
713-780-ESPN. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Ben, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Ben?
Hey, 2011 World Series Game 6, the Rangers versus the St. Louis Cardinals, where Nelson Cruz dropped on right field.
Oh, that's right.
And the Rangers failed to win their first World Series.
Yeah, it's too bad. It's just heartbreaking Arlington Rangers didn't win that World Series. The Rangers,
I remember the Bartman game.
If memory serves, the Rangers were down. They were one pitch away, two different occasions to win
Series. I think that's right.
And both times they fell short. And I want to think, I believe Lance Berkman was one of them. I think Berkman had like a critical hit for the Cardinals that like kept it alive.
I think that sounds right because I do remember wondering if he was going to get a ring, getting out of Houston and coming up big. And I also remember then thinking, is this going to solidify him as a potential Hall of Famer if he gets a ring and he was a part of it? I remember watching the Bartman game on TV.
I do too. And then that was the interest. That was like,
I got one.
I think Dusty was in the dugout. I think Dusty was the manager of the Cubs. And then he had Wood going 6-7, and they lost to the Marlins. And the Marlins, of course, with Josh Beckett, went on, won the World Series.
And Moises Alou was the left fielder.
Yeah, he got ticked. He was not very
– slammed the glove down, and he was also – I got one for you.
I thought he was going to pee on Bartman's hands.
I remember the Kirk Gibson home run over the Giants or over the A's with Dennis Eckersley.
In a season so improbable, the impossible
was happening.
Yeah,
the Vin Scully call, everything about that game, and watching it late night college girlfriend and I at the time were at her relative's.
What was his name?
That's not funny. We were staying in the basement of one of her relative's house, and I had the TV on while everybody was sleeping to watch the end of that game.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out back out to the HRMP listener line. Big E, you're in the high. You're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's up, Big E?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I don't remember what year it was, but Duke versus Kentucky. When Christian Laettner hit that.
Oh, the perfect game. The perfect.
To Clarence's point, I remember where I was. I was working for the Trailblazers. I think I was an intern. And we had a Duke guy. We had Ala Abdelnaby on our team. And they had it on the scoreboard pregame because we had a game that night. And we watched the end of it while in the pregame warm-up. The old Memorial Coliseum in Portland.
Yeah. I don't remember. I wasn't watching that game live, but I read the book. And Leitner did not miss a shot that entire game. And, of course, we know how it ends. With the Grant Hill, the pass to Leitner. Leitner, one dribble, shoot, wins it. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go one more. Lamont, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Lamont?
Hey, man, I don't know if this qualifies as a game, but I heard what's his name, bring up golf. So I'm going to go a different way. Buster Douglas beating Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
That was game breaking right there.
I love that one because there's a lot of a lot of people actually texted in some boxing ones. One person texted in Bonner Griffin UFC, which was like it was a great fight, but it also was like the pivotal moment of UFC where it became like mainstream. So it was more symbolic. I mean, it was a great fight, but it was symbolic, and what it meant for the sport was huge as well. Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson, greatest upset in boxing history. Whenever Mike Tyson was must watch all the time. So like everybody knew that Mike Tyson was fighting, and then no one expected Buster Douglas to beat him. Mike Tyson knocked down Buster Douglas. I think it was the 7th or 8th round. I can't remember. And then the very next round, Buster Douglas, when nobody thought he was going to be able to respond, knocked out Mike Tyson, and everybody was stunned.
Might have changed Tyson's career, too, to some degree, along with the off-out-of-the-ring stuff. But yeah. I mean, everybody always remembers that he was one of the most feared men in the sport, but the accolades weren't there, and that was kind of the start of the reasons why they weren't there. The other one that pops into my mind that I watched, and it was random that I watched it, but at the time, my buddy Tony's wife was the head of all the training for North Shore. The North Shore Hail Mary
Oh, yeah.
In the state championship game in the corner of the end zone just a couple years ago was an amazing finish.
Yeah, Rams-Titans Super Bowl, that's another one. Tutter mentioned Marvin Hagler, Tommy Hearns, another great boxing fight. 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, our Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. 713-780-3776. Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.